Welcome to 20 Feet Closer, a podcast presented by Bible Belt Outdoors. I'm Ryan Bailey, and I'm here tonight with Jackson McCloy from West Virginia. Jackson, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing well. Was doing a whole lot better when I was up there chasing big bucks with you, but how's the hunting been the last couple weeks since we left?
It's been kind of slow, really. I mean, it sounded like you guys seen more action than I seen when I've been in the woods. I've been in the woods pretty consistently ever since you guys pulled out. And things have been pretty slow.
I got you. Well, what we wanted to bring to you guys tonight, this will be the very first episode of 20 Feet Closer, the podcast that is going to be presented by Bible Belt Outdoors. Jensen and I both are pro staffers in film for Bible Belt Outdoors, and we've been talking about doing a podcast, especially after we sat down and did some live videos together when we were in Ohio, and it actually came together quicker than I imagined it was going to, but I think it's really going to turn out good. What do you think, Jensen?
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I know I've been listening to a ton of podcasts lately. You know, at work, job, and I mean, what better way to share knowledge and stories and, you know, experiences and tips and tactics than to hop on a podcast and, you know, let people pick your brain and let them hear what you have to say, you know?
Absolutely. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about with today being the first episode, kind of what this is going to be about and, you know, where we came up with the idea and you actually came up with the name. I guess we'll start with that, 20 Feet Closer. Tell everybody a little bit about how you came up with that name. And I think whenever you recommended it to me, whenever I asked you what you thought we should call it, as soon as you said it, I knew that was the right one. It just fits perfectly, and I'll let you explain a little more about it.
Well, of course, Bible Belt's faith-based, and what I mean by 20 Feet Closer is just when I'm sitting in the stand, I feel 20 feet closer, and not only do I feel, but I am usually 20 feet closer to God is how I feel. As a deer hunter, everyone knows, you might sit in the stand from noon to, you know, whatever, depending on time of year, whatever time it gets dark, you might have a bunch of downtime. So I use that time to, I mean, sometimes I bring my Bible with me and read, or you know, look on my phone up Bible verses, and I just feel closer to God when I'm in my deer stand. It's like, I mean, of course, I go to church and things like that, but it's like my second church. My church away from church is what I like to call it, because I have a lot of time to think and reflect on the year and, you know, things that are going on in life, not only in hunting, but in my personal life, and I do a lot of praying, and I just felt what better way or what better name for a podcast than 20 feet closer, you know?
Right. I agree completely. And it's, you know, it's a, for those that don't hunt, I don't guess they'll really understand it, but I know that for everybody that hunts and is a Christian, I think that they will completely embrace that name just because, you know, there's something about being out there and watching the world wake up and seeing all of God's creation. And It's an amazing time. That's part of the stuff that I love about hunting. It's not just the kill. It's not just, you know, just being out there is great to me. I love it. I love every minute.
It's amazing. Man, I never told you this. Actually, this is kind of hopping off topic. But I was sitting in the stand, I believe it was Sunday night, and the sun sets behind me at this stand, which you know very well. Is where the Bailey buck is that you had an encounter with your first day here. But I could see the shadow of a bird coming down the side of the tree. And that bird landed on my bow, which was in my hand because I had a deer at the pile. So I'm frozen like a statue, right? And this bird jumps on my leg and then on my arm and then jumps up on my shoulder and it actually poops on my shoulder. But I was like, man, if I didn't hunt, I would never get to experience and appreciate some of the things that happens in nature. I mean, who would ever experience a bird landing on them?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Not just that, but it was a cool experience to just, I almost felt like I was the tree and that bird had no idea that I was sitting there, and it was just, it was a surreal moment for me. It was awesome.
Absolutely. Well, since you bring up that particular stand, I guess we can jump on into not a very long recap, because I'm in the process of editing some videos to give you guys a true recap of mine and Brett's Ohio trip. But we'll briefly kind of talk about the Ohio trip. I came up on Tuesday, October the 30th, and hunted that evening and saw the Bailey buck that he's talking about. Is what he ended up naming it. I saw that deer the very first evening that I was in Ohio. I had been in the stand 45, 50 minutes, and this about 165-inch deer comes following a doe in. It was a crazy evening, and it's actually uploading at the moment. I've just finished editing it about 30 minutes ago, and hopefully it'll be up on the YouTube channel by tomorrow. So won't give too much away as far as, or I'm not going to spill the beans on that yet. I'll let them watch the video, but we had a great trip. It was really fun. Just the fellowship and the time getting to spend together. It was, you know, just that part of it. It was worth the whole thing there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Being so far apart and however many team members we have now, you know, being all across the country, it's really, really special when we do get to meet face to face and share stories and stuff like that. So it was a killer time for me. I wish you guys were still here. I wish you'd just come move in and we could chase these deer around every day or every weekend.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would love to. I mean, I'd love to be able to spend more time up there, just because it's a whole different world when it comes to hunting up there versus hunting here in North Carolina. But we'll definitely talk more about that on some future podcasts, about the differences in here in North Carolina and there in West Virginia and Ohio. But what I want to jump into now is kind of what this podcast is going to be like in the future. Kind of give everybody an idea of what this is going to be, and what I think the idea that we had when me and Jansen talked about it, that we want this to be, you know, whether you're traveling to work in the mornings or evenings, whether you're around the house, just want something to listen to, we want to be able to provide that. We're not going to make super long episodes, you know, hours and hours of podcasts, but you know, just we're going to go over topics, questions that you, the viewers, submit to us, and also ones that we feel are popular topics. And then we're also going to jump in and talk with people from different companies, specifically companies that sponsor us at Bible Belt Outdoors. I just talked with Andy Buchanan, who's the owner of Thorn Archery, and I know he's going to be on either the second or third episode. I'm going to interview him and kind of pick his brain on the broadhead world. But tell a little bit about what you want to see out of this podcast, Jansen. Like, what do you want to be able to bring to the viewers?
I know I've been listening to Wired and Hunt podcast at work, and I'm kind of new to the podcast thing, but for me it was just something, I don't know, it, when I listen to them, it gives me a drive or like some kind of hope to hear other people in other parts of the country going through different scenarios in their hunting situation, and you know, rut strategies and hanging stands, and you know, all different kinds of scenarios when it comes to hunting. It's been a very vital tool, I think, to me, and it's filled me so full of knowledge. I'm like, well, man, I don't want to store up the knowledge, what little I do have, about, you know, hunting here in West Virginia and Ohio. I'd love to share, you know, what I do know, and also learn from the viewers and listeners about what they have to say and questions they have that they want answered. So I'm really excited about it. I think it's going to be awesome, and hopefully continues for a long time.
I agree, and I think that's part of it. Whenever people submit questions, it kind of gets the creative juices flowing and the wheels turning, and gets me thinking about, okay, they asked this question. For example, I made a post earlier on the Bible Belt Outdoors Facebook page for people to submit questions, and I won't get into those questions yet. That's how we're going to end everything. But just for example, the very first question, what's the best tree stand for all day hunting? that's something I wouldn't necessarily sit down and have a conversation with you about. And I'm sure mine and your opinion may be completely different on that. But it's something that gets the memory, or excuse me, the creative juices flowing and gets the wheels turning about, you know, why do I pick the stands that I pick to hunt out of? You know, why do you pick the stands that you pick? You know, maybe there's a stand that I hadn't necessarily ever tried, or that you have. I think that's the brilliant thing about it, is that it's going to be able to have us bounce ideas off of each other, as well as take questions from the viewers. And I think it's really going to be a blessing to all of us.
Oh yeah, and there's so many different scenarios, because your answer might be right for this time of year, and my answer might be for another time of year, because we all know deer go through, you know, different phases. Like the juries have the 13. It's so true. It speaks volumes. You know, you'd be on this deer, and he might be doing this thing, you know, religiously, and then all of a sudden the leaves fall, or the rut kicks in, and he just completely switches what he's doing. So it's going to be interesting to hear different viewpoints on what people have to say, and what you have to say, and what I have to say on scenarios like that for different times of the year and such.
Right. And we're definitely going to get Brett Hall, who's the owner and founder of Bob Weld Outdoors. I'm sure he'll be on as many of these as he's able to as well, and get his opinion. It's nice to have. Sometimes it's frustrating that we're all spread out across the country, but it's also nice to have different viewpoints and different opinions from across the country. Because I know just spending the 4 or 5 days with you in Ohio, or in West Virginia and Ohio, our hunting strategies are a little different, but there's big differences in the deer behavior here and there. And I think that's going to be neat to bounce ideas off of each other and kind of talk about, you know, what the differences are and that sort of thing.
For sure.
All right, so I think we'll, just so we don't get too lengthy here. Yeah, can you hear me? Can you still hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay. So we don't get too lengthy, we'll jump into the questions that people submitted. You ready to knock those out?
Let's do it.
All right, again, the first question was, what's the best tree stand for all day hunting? I'll let you start with your answer.
I would say it depends on all what time of year it is. I mean, if they're in a feeding pattern, like, depending on where you're at in the country, what time your season comes in. Ours comes in here in West Virginia and Ohio. Right at the end of September, the last weekend of September is when it comes in. And I would stick to feeding, because they're still in them feeding patterns. After they lose their velvet, they're still stuck in those patterns. But, you know, fast forward to late October, early November, I would want to stick close to cover.
I think the actual question he's asking is what brand or what style of tree stand?
What style of tree stand? Oh.
Yeah, like maybe brand or style, I'm pretty sure is the question he's asking, not like setup.
I don't know about brand, but style, I'm a big fan of a lock-on. Ladder stands can be very comfortable, but in my personal opinion, there's just something about a lock-on. You can do, there's more options, you know, to maybe squeeze in that littler tree or tighter tree with a lot of cover and foliage. And I think you can bounce around a lock-on a lot easier than you can a ladder stand. I'm not a huge fan on climbers, but I am a fan of being mobile, so I probably should get me a climber. It's sad that I don't have one, but is he talking about like all day sits, comfortability type thing?
Yeah, I think that's more what his question is, and I guess my answer would be, I've got two different stands that I personally own that I think fit this bill, one being a lock-on and one being a climber. The lock-on is it's one with one of those, it's like a sling-style seat. It's got the same kind of seat as a zero-gravity chair. I know Muddy makes a really good one. Millennium makes a few. Those to me for all day sits are the most comfortable. And then with a climber, I have a Summit, and you're hard pressed to find a stand that's going to be more comfortable than my Summit because of the seat. It just hangs. It's very, very comfortable. But I agree with you as far as a lock on is a whole lot more versatile than a climber because you don't have to find that perfectly straight tree.
Right.
That tree with no limbs. I think that's, I think that's the better option.
Yeah, and I personally have a Hawk that's built kind of like you're saying with the Millennium and the seat you're talking about. And that's probably the only tree stand I have sitting in a tree right now where I could be actually comfortable and sit all day. Now, yeah. I'd still sit all day if I had to and just about any stand if it was the right circumstances. But
and I think that's the stand.
For sure.
I think I hunted that particular stand you're talking about. I think I hunted it while I was there with you, and it is a really comfortable stand as well. It's got a little footrest.
And I like a big clap. I like a big clap. I'm going to stand, feel safe if you need to stand up and move around. I don't like standing on a shoebox is what I've hunted some stands. It's small, and it just, you don't want to breathe the wrong way. The big platform stands and the bigger seats even get you a stand with some armrests or footrests like you're talking about that this Hawk has, and you'll be able to stick it out there all day, I think.
Yeah. All right, the next question was, how high should your tree stand be to have a successful hunt?
You want me to start off with this one?
Go for it.
Okay. This varies for me because in early season, of course, the leaves haven't fallen yet, so I don't think there's really a need to get too high. I usually always get above 15 feet in my personal experience. I always usually get above 15 feet. But, if there's really good cover at 12 or 13 feet, go for it. I think cover is your most important part there. I don't think height's an issue. But after those leaves drop, I like to get a little bit higher just to be out of the line of sight of any deer that's going to come with me. And also, it depends on the topography of where you're hanging your stand. If you're hanging it in the middle of a flat and the deer are coming behind you, you really don't want them to be eye level with you. So I usually hang my stands anywhere from 20 to 25 feet. But that varies, like I said, with cover. Like I've moved a couple stands this year, that were perfect early season. And then you go in there and it's like, what's going on? I have no cover anymore. So I'll actually add a few screw steps or ladder sticks or whatever the case may be to get up there that extra 5 feet and just provide me a little bit more of an advantage for not and being seen by the critters.
Right, and I honestly think this sounds crazy, but I think this answer can vary of what part of the country you're in. And I'll tell you the reason why I say that. Here in North Carolina, every single deer that comes out, I swear they look up, every one of them. The higher you are, the better here in North Carolina. But whenever I came to Ohio to hunt with you, it was a whole different ballgame. It's like I'm 18 foot off the ground and I'm standing up, I'm grabbing my bow off my hanger, I'm turning my camera on, and the deer, they don't pay any attention at all. If I was doing that in North Carolina, they would turn inside out and blow and be in the next county over. But for a general rule of thumb, I would say 20 foot is my preferred height, 20 to 25. I would say, I'm not going to say in my younger days because I'm not really that old, but in my teens and in my high school days, I have been known to climb even higher with a climbing stand on up 30 to 35, even 40 foot one at one particular spot that I can recall. We had to tie two 20 foot pull ropes together for me to pull my bow up. But it's like you're talking about. You really didn't even feel that high. The topography was, it was completely different. I was on a, right beside a ridge. It was kind of to my left. And the deer still were almost at eye level if they walked to the top of that ridge, and I'm 38, 39 foot in the tree. So,
and another thing you've got to watch is when you do hang a stand that high, your shot angle is very important because you're shrinking the vitals. The higher you go, the vitals shrink dramatically.
Exactly.
So you got to be careful there. And just, I just say find what's comfortable for you, really. I mean, if you feel safe and you feel comfortable and you feel that you can get by with that movement that you need to get by with, I don't know. I'm sure a lot of people that are listening will probably be filmers or whatever, and a lot of them might not. So you might not have to worry about, you know, reaching for your, to turn your mic on and your camera on and get everything set and then grab your bow and then turn your GoPro on. So you might be able to get by with, you know, being a little bit lower in your stand and just worrying about your cover. And don't be afraid to, if you do lose that cover, look around. See it. See if the trees hold its leaves longer than the other, or a pine or anything like that. Move your setup. Go in there midday, you know, or right before rain. Move your setup. And then get out of there and have at her again next time you go.
And I think one of the important things about tree stand height, in my opinion, is your scent. I think it really gets those thermals up and over the deer, especially if the deer, you know, if you're hunting in a state where you can bait and you're hunting over a corn pile, the higher you are at a 20-yard shot, yeah, you have to keep in mind the vitals, like you were talking about, but the higher you are, the higher your thermals are going to be coming off and being carried over those deer head if you don't have a good wind.
Right.
And Brett actually commented on this specific question and said, make sure Jansen researches and answers this one. Last time I hunted with him, I had nosebleeds.
Oh, no. Come on. That stands about 23 foot in the air.
It does feel a lot higher because you're on that power line right away.
Oh, yeah, it does.
Right away kind of sags down there, and it makes you feel like you're way in the air. But
yeah, you can see a lot. It's like you're hovering like a drone up above the trees because you're so high. But
all right, we'll move on to the next question. What's the range you wouldn't shoot a deer with a bow? I know this is a lot of people get into it in this question, but
that's a tough one.
Yeah, I'll start with it. My personal, and I think this is case by case, each person has a different answer here, but mine's around 50 yards. 50 yards is what I'm comfortable shooting at a deer with. The reason I say that, I've got a short draw length. I don't shoot the fastest bow in the world. The farther range I'm shooting at, what I'm starting to worry about is a deer jumping the string. And 50 yards, I still feel like if I hold low and hold on the heart, that they're, if they do drop, they're going to drop into it, and I'm still going to get the top of the lungs. But I honestly think that's whatever you're comfortable with. Obviously, I believe you should practice at whatever distances you think you're going to take those shots at, and I do practice at 50 yards, you know, quite a bit during the off season. But I don't know. I think it's just case by case, whatever you're comfortable with. What do you think?
I agree 100%. It depends on the scenario. Like, if I have a deer coming in and it has no idea I'm there, I would feel comfortable with that 50-yard shot. Like you, I do have a longer draw length, but I don't have the fastest bow in the world, so I don't want to take a chance of that deer spooking or hearing my bow and twirling, because you know how fast. I mean, their reaction time is way faster than any bow on the market. I don't care what anyone says on that opinion. I don't think they make a bow that a deer can't drop. Duck a string on. So I practice personally. I just go up to a 50-yard pin, and I'm not going to guess any past 50. I don't want to aim high or none of that. I don't have a 60-yard pin, so I would agree with 50 yards. But even at 50 yards, I would have to feel 100% confident, because I mean, you throw in buck fever and wind and the noise of the bow going off, you're just asking for trouble. I've made shots like that in perfect scenarios, but I would prefer that 20-yard shot like everybody. And usually, you know, with hunting over bait, I'm usually presented with a 20-yard or less shot, thankfully. But I would feel comfortable and very, very, very comfortable out to 40, but I would stretch it to 50 if the circumstances were in my favor. Like, for instance, the right-of-way stand. I have a very heavily traveled deer trail, and I think it is right at 49 or 50 yards in that right-of-way. Well, there's a lot of road noise because I'm right beside the interstate, and it's usually windy up on top of that ridge. So I'm really not worried about the deer hearing the bow go off and jumping the string. So I would feel comfortable making that shot. But like I said, it's just all in your personal preference and how far do you practice that and feel confident. Because there's a big difference in shooting a piece of foam than there is at a mature whitetail or a doe or whatever. There's a big difference there. So I just pick up your comfortable yardages and practice religiously and do whatever you feel is right. I mean, if you think you can make the shot, make it. If you think you can make that 70-yard shot and you've practiced and you can do it, I mean, who knows what we're going to do when we're faced in that situation.
Exactly, exactly. On to the next one. Is grunting best during pre-rut, rut, or post-rut? And the follow-up question to that is the same question for rattling and attractant scents. I'll let you start on that one.
In my opinion, I've had most of my success calling-wise and scent-wise in the pre-rut stage, you know, because they're just now cruising for that first available doe, and they're starting to show dominance, so they're looking for that fight, looking, starting to mark their territory and checking scrapes and things like that. So I think that is a very good time to whip out the rattling horns and your grunt call and your scents and put them in the scrapes and maybe do a drag line lock like me and Brett did. I think during the rut and the peak of the rut when they're really running, I think they're really not focused. Now, I'm sure, I mean, if they're faced with a buck trying to get a doe, they're going to fight and stuff like that. And I'm not saying you cannot call a deer in because I've called several, but I think in the peak of the rut when they're with the, I mean, recently even I've grunted probably too much and they have no care in the world. They got one thing on their mind and you ain't got it. Now, I do use a bleat call, and I've had good success with a fawn bleat, like a bleat and heat or a can call, or a doe grunt even. I've had success with that. And then also rattling later on in the year, I've had good success. You know, what people call the post-rut, I've had good success then also. But definitely that pre-rut when they're just starting, I like that a lot.
I would say my answer for, I'll start kind of different, rattling. I personally believe that pre-rut is the best time for rattling. Obviously, that's when most bucks are fighting and they're kind of falling into that pecking order. And then for grunting, I would say I would agree with you, pre-rut and or rut. You've always got that chance of a buck that's cruising that doesn't currently have a doe he's trying to breed, and he hears that grunt off in the distance, and he thinks, well, there's another buck that has a doe, and he's tending her, he's following her. So I think that works on into the rut more. I don't really lean towards rattling during the rut. I normally keep that in the pre-rut. As far as scents go, I'm a big fan of scents almost year-round. Pure whitetail kind of is what got me started on this. You know, deer check community scrapes year-round, does, bucks, everything. I think it's just important to pick your scents and pick the correct scents. If you're in the pre-rut, I think, you know, some doe estrus or some buck and rut, some type of scent there. The Bachelor group is one of my favorites from Pure Whitetail. That's a mix of several different bucks. But that, as far as scents go, I think you can utilize them, you know, kind of year-round, those community scrapes. Because, you know, deer even checking them in the summer, and I think Pure Whitetail's brought that to light. Whereas before, I really didn't even realize that or didn't believe that.
Right.
On to the next. What areas do you focus on hunting during the rut? It's kind of a two-part answer for me. Doe bedding areas being the number one answer. And then I guess the second answer would be wherever you have the
Can
most...
Can you repeat that question? You were breaking up a little bit.
Okay, I'm sorry. What areas do you focus on hunting during the rut? Yeah, during the rut, what areas do you focus on hunting? First and foremost, I'd say doe bedding areas. My second part of that answer would be whichever location or stand site that you have the most doe activity. on a normal basis, that's where I'm going to be during the rut.
I would agree with that. Definitely get as close as you can to their bedding, and if you don't feel like you're close enough, move closer until you start having deer come to the downwind side of it, and then back out of there. But definitely where you consistently see does moving, because they're obviously it's the rut, they're after the does. But stick close to that bedding, because they're going to be in there. It's the thickest stuff you can find. Go after it. And like for instance here in West Virginia and Ohio, you can bait. So if you got does coming and not bucks early season, you know, don't give up, because that's like the stand that Ryan was hunting. It took me 5 weeks to get a buck on camera. And then, boom, out of nowhere, you know, I had consistent does coming in there, so I just stuck it out. And then now there's several shooters in there, including the Bailey buck. But, yeah, I'd definitely stick to bedding. And if you got does coming to a food source, keep on it.
Kind of a different answer, more of a, I don't know, a land type answer, I guess you'd say, would something that I'm a fan of is fields. And this is kind of a secret that I've kept. I guess I'm going to let it out of the bag here. And it may not be a secret to others. I haven't ever really talked with anybody about it. But I like hunting on field edges during the rut. And the reason being, just like at the place you had me where I saw the Bailey buck, that field to the left, every time I saw a buck chasing a doe, that doe would make a beeline for the middle of that field where she could stop, turn around, catch her breath, and then she would dart back in the woods. For whatever reason, I've had really good luck hunting field edges during the rut. I don't know why, but honestly, I really don't think there's a bad answer during the rut. If it's a true rut where bucks are out cruising, chasing does, I don't think there's a bad answer. I don't think there's a bad stand location. Any stand location can be the one that he's going to run her by on that particular day. So, but that's kind of what I try to focus on is, you know, doe bedding areas, areas of high traffic of does, and then, again, field edges.
Yeah, the main thing is just get in the woods. I mean, that's the time for the all-day sits and for your vacation days to be spent, because we all know anything can happen in the rut. So just spend time in the stand. But if I was going to pick an answer, that would definitely be it.
Right. The next one is, when is this rain going to stop? My fields are muddy. Good question.
When the sun comes out.
That's right.
Would be my answer.
Good question. Here in North Carolina, I think we're going to get a break in the morning till around 1, so I'm going to try to hit the woods. And then by tomorrow evening, it's going to move right back in. So,
well, right now here in West Virginia, we had snow the past 2 days, so there's that.
Yeah.
Which I'm a fan of.
Yeah.
I like cold temperatures.
Next question is...
Cold temperatures equals mature buck movement.
Exactly. Next question is, do you have any luck going into the woods on a four-wheeler? I'll let you start with that one.
Ooh. I like to be as stealthy as can be. I like easy access. If the deer are used to four-wheeler activity and ATV activity or tractor activity, absolutely. I mean, if it's something that they're used to on a daily basis, or if they know and they don't associate that sound or sight with danger, absolutely, you can use something like that to your advantage for sure. If not, I would steer away from that if possible. If you can't, try to minimize it. Use it as little as possible. But if it's something that the deer are used to, and like I said, they don't associate that with danger for sure, I would use that to your advantage.
My answer is a little different. Where Jansen walks in most of his spots are the spots that I've been to with him. 90% of the places I hunt, I have to ride a four-wheeler or a UTV. We have a Yamaha Rhino, and then I have a four-wheeler. I don't really think it messes anything up. I would much rather a deer get spooked to the sound of a four-wheeler or UTV versus the sound of me walking or them seeing me. I would much rather them associate danger with the four-wheeler than when they see me, because the four-wheeler's not going to be in a tree stand with me. I normally park around 300 yards away from where I'm hunting, and I always try to hide it pretty well. That's kind of the way I do that. But I think it depends on, you know, your access to the, is it an easy walk from the truck? Because if it is, then I agree with you. I don't think you should take a four-wheeler with you. But if it's a mile or two in, I don't have a problem with it.
It also depends on location, on in my opinion. Like if you're baiting a deer and you're close to their bedding, I personally wouldn't want to take a four-wheeler in there. But if it's a food source and it's midday and you're doing your bait checking or your hanging stands at midday, I wouldn't worry about it too much. But there's a lot of factors that can play into that, and what time of day you're going in there, what weather, what wind direction. There's a bunch of different factors, but right. I don't see a right or wrong answer, really.
Right.
It's just all in personal preference.
Next question is, how bad does predators ruin your hunting, and how can you get rid of them with limited time to hunt? I don't really have a lot of firsthand experience with this, because I don't have a whole lot of problems with predators. I'll have a handful of coyote pictures every year. I have a ton of fox pictures, and funny enough, I have a lot of pictures with deer and foxes in the same picture. But it's not really become a problem here in North Carolina, I wouldn't say. Some areas more than others, but we got a fairly decent amount of predator hunters here locally, and I'll leave it up to them. I may get out once or twice a year to try to kill some dogs, but well, how about you? What do you do to prevent that?
That predator hunting is something I take seriously, and after I'm done and out of the wind of deer season, me and a couple buddies of mine go pretty much every weekend, all night long, and a lot of daytime. During February here in West Virginia, Ohio, and March is their breeding season. So they're very receptive to calling. So I'd get out there and hunt them as much as you can without ruining your hunting area, you know. But I think the most effective way is trapping. In my personal opinion, I know some trappers right here.
I agree there, for sure.
That trap a bunch, and it's quiet, you know. It's very, it can be very, very effective. Trust me, you're going to, I mean, I'm not saying it's not hard, but I think it is a lot. I personally, which I've never trapped, but I know a lot of people that trap, and there's a lot more predators killed by way of trap than by way of sitting out in the woods and calling them in. But and here in West Virginia, Ohio, it is a very, very big problem. I've had a bunch of hunts ruined by coyotes, and I shoot everyone I see. But I would say trapping is the most effective way. You know, when it's season, and control your scent, and just do some research on it, but I think trapping would be the most effective way to control
the population. I think it's less intrusive, too. You're moving in one time to set traps out, and then you're coming back a couple days later to check them. So I think it's less intrusive than, you know, jumping around, walking a bunch in your spots.
Right.
Now, the next question, what time of day would you say would be a good time to kill a mature buck? You want this one, or you want me to take it?
I'll let you take it first.
All right. My answer is the evening time. The reason my answer is that is I just, for whatever reason, I feel like evening hunts are better than morning hunts. I listen to a lot of podcasts and videos, and Todd Prignitz from White Knuckle Productions and Bill Winky from Midwest Whitetail, both of them, you know, sometimes Todd doesn't even hunt in the morning until after Halloween. And, you know, I'm not that diehard about it, but I'll agree that, you know, mornings until the cold weather hits, I'm not a fan of morning hunting then. I'll get out, obviously, on opening day. I'm going to be in the woods no matter what. But, you know, until this time of year, whenever the weather gets cold, the pressure starts rising, you get those ripe mornings, that's when I'm going to be. But evening hunts year-round, to me, are the best opportunity to put a mature buck on the ground.
I would agree to that to an extent. Definitely, I wouldn't hunt a morning. until that first cold front in October, for sure. And from late October to probably Thanksgiving, I love morning hunts. I just see a lot of activity. Plus, early season, you know, you're probably hunting a food source, and you're just going to spook a lot of deer out there in the morning because they're still on feeding patterns, and you're just going to decrease your odds. But I like evening. I've killed almost all of my mature bucks in the evening, so I would pick evenings, but like I said, it depends on the time of year. In the rut, get in the woods, and the cold fronts, get in the morning, get in your morning spots. But I would say overall, probably evenings. I've had my best success in the evening.
Gotcha. And, you know, as far as during the rut, I would say, like you mentioned earlier, all-day sits are probably warranted during the rut because, again, you never know when that buck's going to chase a doe bite.
Right.
All right, and let me refresh and make sure we haven't got any more while we've been talking. All right, the final question is, what bow do you shoot? And I'll let you start with this one.
I shoot a Bear Domain, I believe is what it's called. I've owned several Bear bows. I like them. They're very easy on the wallet. They're dependable. They're not the fastest bow, but they're very smooth. And it's just, I like a Bear bow. I like a Hoyt. I like a Matthews. I mean, I'll shoot anything if it gets the job done. But this year, I'm carrying my Bear, and I have a lot of confidence in it. It's not a newer, I bought it brand new, but it's a 2012, but I don't get caught up in that stuff. I mean, if it'll blow through the ribcage of a deer, I don't really care. Just, I like a Bear. Other people like Hoyt. Other people like Matthews. But it's personal preference again. You know, whatever you feel comfortable with that you can take out there and successfully kill a deer, have at it.
Right, and I think that's the beauty now of us not having a bow sponsor. Everybody's kind of going their own route and shooting whatever they want, and it's been a really big stress reliever because everybody has different opinions when it comes to bows, and it's been nice being able to everybody just to go their own direction. Me personally, I've been a Matthews fan since the first Matthews I had was an LX, which I believe is around a 2004 model. I've been a Matthews fan since I was pretty young, since I was in middle school, I think. I've shot mostly Matthews my entire life till whenever we were originally sponsored by Athens. I shot an Athens for a little over a year, and then I shot a Moxie for a little over a year. And then when we made the decision to not have a bow sponsor anymore, I jumped right back to Matthews. So currently I'm shooting a Matthews No Cam HTX. Again, it's not the fastest bow in the world. I've got short arms and I only have a 27-inch draw. So I'm not one of those that goes out here and chases speed. Like you said, if it'll blow through the ribcage of a deer, I'm happy with it. And then I know Brett shoots a PSE Evo 7, maybe? It's an Evo.
I
can't remember which Evo, but he shoots a PSE Evo. I know Bartlett shoots a PSE. Austin Street, who's a pro staffer with us, shoots a Martin. Matt Miller shoots a Hoyt. See,
whoever. I think we still have a couple people still shooting Moxie, too, don't we?
Yeah, I think we got a few still shooting Moxie. I think one or two may have switched back to Athens. I think Adam Yelton shooting an Elite. We've got the spectrum pretty well covered when it comes
to there's no wrong answer to that. This question, it's whatever you feel comfortable in, go shoot it. That's all that matters. Don't chase what's new and on the market. If that's what you want to do and you can afford it, have at it. But do I think your odds are better if you get the newest best bow out and I'm shooting a 2004 model LX Matthews? No, I don't.
No, I agree. I think it's whatever you're confident with too. You know what Brett and I were talking when we were up there with you. It was like Brett had so much confidence in his his older bow, and then he had got this PSC, and it's not that it was a, you know, a worse bow than the one he was shooting. I think he was shooting a Matthew switchback, but he had had it for so long, he had built so much confidence in it. It was just like a growing pains of, hey, I've got to get used to a completely different feeling bow. And but I think it really just goes off a comfort level. Whatever you're comfortable with, I think, is the right answer.
If you were going to pick a bow, what would your number one pick be? If you could buy any bow. I'm going to make my own question up.
I would say right now, you picked a good day to ask it because Matthews released their new bows today. So, thanks.
The verdicts?
Well, I've leaning toward the verdicts, but the TX5 is really the one that's catching my eye, honestly.
Is that Matthews?
Yeah, it's the new, they released three today, the Verdicts, the TX5, and the Traverse. The TX5 is for little short-arm people like me. It's the specs on it, to me, are the most intriguing, just because it's got a 5-inch brace out, which is...
Oh, wow.
It's going to be different, but they're getting 345 feet per second. Out of a 5-inch brace height, and it's only 28 inches axle, I believe. It's just a real short bow, but very similar to the Tri-X, but they shrunk the brace height down a little bit and get some more speed. What about you? If you could only pick one,
man, I've shot the new Hoyts, and not the brand new Hoyts, but I like the Hoyt. I would like to get my hands on the new Elite. What is it? Help me out.
Oh,
Ritual 30.
Yeah, the Ritual.
I like that, but I don't know. I like the new Bear line they just came out with. But if I was going to pick a bow to hunt with, I like Hoyt. I really do. I do. I like Hoyt a lot.
Well, since we've went through everybody's questions, I think that's pretty well going to wrap it up. We're almost 50 minutes in. Like we said at the beginning, it's probably going to go longer than we had originally planned. We'll go ahead and get this one uploaded for you guys here pretty soon. That way you can listen to it and give us some feedback. My goal, and I haven't really spoke with Jansen about this, my goal at the moment is to try to put out one a week. I don't know how that's going to work, and we'll see, but we may try to get a backlog of them first, so we may record four, five, or six, and then start posting. But I definitely wanted to get the first one done and knocked out so we can, A, get the kinks worked out of us editing and all that good stuff and posting them, but two, just to give you guys a little sample of what it's going to be like, and just keep checking back on our Facebook. That'll be where we'll announce, you know, where these podcasts are going to be posted at. And that sort of thing, and keep you up to date as far as that goes. You got anything else?
Thanks for tuning in. And I don't know, man. I'm excited. I love it.
I am too.
This was fun. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, it feels like 50 minutes flew by, and I you know, it's good to bounce ideas off of each other, and I really enjoyed it, but. Well, I hope you guys have a good rest of the week, and thank you for tuning in, and thank you for all those that submitted questions. And without further ado, we're going to get on out of here, and I'm going to get into bed so I can go kill a deer in the morning.
It must be nice. I got to work, but be careful. Enjoy your time 20 feet close.
That's right. See y'all.
See ya.